Beasley, cash me out.
There you go. Nice.
Bert Horford catches, kicks, Dort for the win. It's good. Pokuševski catch fire three, and that is good.
What is up? Welcome to the Uncontested Postgame Podcast. The Thunder fall to the Kings tonight by a final score of 103-99. The score is a bit deceiving in itself. It really wasn't a close game until the very, very end. The Thunder made a pretty significant fourth quarter comeback, had a big run to cut down the lead. To go into more depth, I will patch this over here to the Uncontested's locker room session, in which I was joined by Jacob to talk about the game, as well as draft lottery odds, as well as Taylor for a few minutes to talk about one of his favorite players on the Thunder. And with that, I will send you guys over. All right, so Oklahoma City falls to the Sacramento Kings 103-99. It was a game that was, I thought, out of hand. It was one of those that Sacramento pulled ahead there in the second quarter, and then even further in the third quarter, they were up by 17 in this game. And then the fourth quarter, they just completely fell apart. And down to the final minutes, you know, Oklahoma City kept chipping away. It was a 12-point lead with a handful of minutes left. You thought, you know, maybe this isn't going to be a big deal. Kings will pull back away. Kept chipping, got within 4 points with about 2 minutes and 30 seconds left due to a 9-0 Thunder run. From there, it was kind of back and forth for a couple minutes, got within two with about a minute 30, got back within one on an and one with a minute and 7 seconds left. But again, Oklahoma City falls by a final score of 103-99. Just checking out the box score here, some of the things that pop out. On the Sacramento side, he didn't have a great game, but it's good to see, from a health standpoint, Marvin Bagley back. He played 31 minutes, was 5 of 15 from the field, finished with 13 points, 7 rebounds. You know, it's like teams like the Kings are kind of fun to make fun of. They haven't had success in a really long time, but looking at their injury issues, luckily, Tyrese Halliburton, we got some news that was positive regarding his injury. It sounds like he will be out for the rest of the season, which doesn't say much considering most teams have 5 to 6 games left at this point. But doesn't sound like anything super long term. He's a super fun rookie. You don't like seeing guys get hurt early in their career. So they get Bagley back. They do lose Halliburton for the rest of the year. And Fox is out for the foreseeable future in health and safety protocol. Reason I bring that up, it's pretty big deal for Oklahoma City. They play the Kings two more times in their next, 5 or 6 games to finish out the season. And so the health of the Kings is going to be a huge correlation to how this team ultimately finishes. Obviously they get back into the fourth slot when it comes to lottery odds. So if the season were to end today, they would be slated fourth best odds for that top pick, meaning I believe they'd have the, at minimum or at worst, the sixth overall pick. I've actually got Jacob, who just joined, who is our kind of draft lottery expert, so I'll invite him on the stage. I think he wants to say a few words regarding the draft lottery and where this loss puts Oklahoma City. Maybe he'll do a quick tankathon sim for us, and then once we run through that, we can jump through the rest of the game and the schedule ahead. But Jacob, welcome. Give us a rundown on where this puts Oklahoma City in relation to the draft.
Yeah. So can you hear me all right?
Yep,
Nick?
I got you.
Okay. The locker room app still won't let me get on my microphone, so that's fun. But yeah, like you mentioned, the Thunder now up to fourth best odds, albeit they have played one more game than the Cavs and the Magic. So they're only a half game up on fourth. Man, Cleveland and Detroit teased us a little bit tonight, right on the edge there. But I guess Oklahoma City teased us a little bit as well. But the Thunder end up losing to improve their draft lottery odds. So for those people who follow me on Twitter, every night I do 10 sims on Tankathon to get a good spread of where the Thunder's two first round picks will land. Tonight, out of 10 spins, five of the 10 had the Thunder landing one top five pick. Three of the 10 had them landing two top five picks. Only two of the 10, 20%, had them with zero top five picks. And I actually rolled one in five twice. I call it the jackpot dream scenario. One in five came up 20% of the time, the same amount of times that zero top five picks came up. So that's a good sign for the Thunder. You know, at the end of the day, you're at the mercy of the lottery balls, but you want to get as many damn balls in that hopper as you can possibly get. And you get that by climbing the reverse standings board, and the Thunder have done a pretty good job of that. So they're in a good spot, and I think maybe the best news for Thunder fans moving forward is we still have Minnesota versus Detroit and Minnesota versus Orlando on the schedule. Somebody has to win one of those two games, right? Like, both teams can't lose.
Yep, that's huge. Do you have a couple of minutes? I've got a fun scenario to run by you.
Yeah, for sure. Before you run the scenario by me real quick, though, another update on the tank standings. Miami loses tonight, which puts them only a half game up on Boston, two games up on Golden State, and 2.5 games up on Charlotte. That's pretty significant because the Thunder wants Miami to slip as far as possible. You want Miami in that play-in tournament because you never know what will happen in one of those play-in tournaments. Somebody gets hot, and Miami could get bounced out, and their pick ends up in the lottery, which would be massive. So you want Miami to continue to lose. They actually have Boston two more times this season, I think. Miami has a fairly difficult schedule down the stretch. So you want Boston, Golden State, Charlotte, even Memphis to continue to win, and Miami to continue to lose. And hopefully that pick continues to slide. And best case scenario for the Thunder, like I said, is Miami ends up in the play-in tournament. Somebody else gets hot, Miami loses, and then now that pick has some lottery balls in the hopper as well.
Yep, and at that point, your worst case scenario is two lottery picks. So my scenario, I've just been thinking about like mock drafts and which guys get taken where and potential Oklahoma City draft prospects. What keeps sticking out to me is the number three pick. So like obviously one is Cade, two probably Evan Mobley, three is really hard, and then like four you take best available of Suggs, Green, whoever's there at 3-4, and then I think
basically you're saying four, you don't take Kuminga is what you're
right,
saying.
Right, exactly. So point being, one, four, and five are easy. Two is likely the big man, but three is like when you're at three, you've got that super hard decision to make on a prospect. Four and five, you're just taking best available, and it's going to be pretty clear. If you're sitting there at three and Cade and Evan Mobley are off the board, and you've got Kuminga, Green, and Suggs, who are you taking at three? I can't figure out who the third best prospect.
Yeah, it's a difficult question. Obviously, I don't think you take Kuminga. I think Kuminga has too many question marks for his game. That doesn't mean he won't end up being a great player. His ceiling is incredibly high, but he's the one with the most question marks left, especially the shooting. I haven't dove a ton into these prospects, right? The top five we've talked about ad nauseum. But it's tough, man, because Jalen Green is a guy that, I mean, he could be a 30-point a night scorer in the NBA. The dude can just cook. He's insane athletically. But Jalen Suggs has, you know, that bulldog defensively in him, is great on the ball, would be a great partner with Shea. You know, it's a difficult question, but I think that's a good problem to have if you land at three, right? I think both those guys are going to end up being really solid NBA players. So that's a really good problem to have. For the Thunder, I don't know who they pick. Right now, if you put a gun to my head and said, what are the top five picks in order? I'm going to say Cade, Mobley,
Suggs, Green, Kuminga.
Ooh, man. I think I agree. And back to Kuminga, you know, I'm high on him. I totally agree. I think he's kind of a lock at number five. But if you were to ask me, like, who has the highest ceiling in this draft outside of Cade, I still may go Kuminga. I mean, just the jumbo wing, super physical, like, just a cut-up, lean, 6'8", 6'9", frame is, like, is what you need in the NBA.
Mm, definitely. No, and, you know, the question marks for Kuminga are all on the offensive end, right? He's got a crazy, like you mentioned, his body is, like, the perfect NBA body. He's, like, built in a lab, right? His body reminds me a little bit of, like, OG Anunoby, which is just, that dude's a athletically and just his build, he's freakish. But what if Kuminga ends up just being OG Anunoby, right? That would be a massive miss in the top five. So I think that's why his upside is there, but I think he maybe has the lowest floor of the five. So it's an interesting question. Who do you go with at three?
Definitely. And in all this to say, I know we've kind of gotten in a rabbit hole here. We were talking about the significance of Haliburton and Fox, among others, being out in the near future. Oklahoma City plays the Kings on the road both Sunday, May 9th, and Tuesday, May 11th. So yep. They got the Warriors back-to-back, then the Kings back-to-back. And so the injuries of this Kings team, the way that they play, is going to be a huge impact. Like, if the Thunder win one more game this season, they're in jeopardy of maybe being four at best. You know, you're right, and you're taking out the potential 2-3. But if you win two games the rest of the season, like, you're a lock at maybe six.
Yeah, there's no way they get to seven.
Right,
that's way too far out at this point. But yeah, if you win one game, maybe two games, at that point, I think you're right at five or six. Again, that Minnesota, Orlando, and Minnesota Detroit games are two very important games down the stretch for the tank standings. But yeah, you've got to lose the rest of them down the stretch. The hope is, you know, obviously, I think you've mentioned this already in the show before I hopped on, Nick, but Haliburton out for the rest of the season, although he avoided a major injury, which is great news. I love Tyrese Haliburton. I actually really wanted to see him play. But there's a chance Fox is back by Sunday, and Harrison Barnes was just doubtful tonight, not actually like out. He was like, you know, doubtful. So hopefully on Sunday, at least one of those two are back, which I think really pushes towards the Kings winning again. I mean, the Kings should have won this one going the way. The Thunder messed around and scored a bunch of baskets in the fourth, and the Kings just completely shut down their leg. And that was really the difference in this one. But yeah, you got to hope that the Thunder can just lose out. I'm still thinking at some point they are going to sit Lu Dort and he will not play the rest of the season. And Lu Dort is like the culprit for keeping them in games. Darius Bazley, surprisingly, kind of a culprit for keeping them in games. But interesting thing tonight, Nick, Kenrich Williams logs a total of 0 minutes.
That was super, super interesting. And it's funny the timing of it, because you and I, and I think even Taylor was in on this conversation this morning, talking about, you know, you tweeted last night, Kenrich Williams is like almost too good to be in games right now for the Thunder. And none of us would have said that in training camp or even at the start of the season, that like Kenrich Williams is making a huge impact on winning. And it's hard to say, like maybe there was something that was nagging, and although he was listed available, maybe like right before the game, kind of like the Poku thing a few weeks ago, something's bothering him. He's not a starter, so you don't notice he plays 0 minutes as much, but like, it's interesting. What's your take on why?
Yeah, maybe something nagging. I think it was more get guys like Deck and Josh Hall and Jalen Horde more minutes. I mean, Jalen Horde played 18 minutes. Deck played 16. Kenrich played 0. Those three guys are essentially interchangeable in the lineup. So that I think it was more just to get looks at other guys and like subtle tanking. Tony Bradley also a DMP tonight, which is interesting because the Kings ran two bigs for most of the night with Marvin Bagley the third and Rashawn Holmes. So kind of surprising that Tony Bradley didn't get any minutes either. But man, Here's the dream scenario is, I don't think it really matters if you play Dort or not Saturday against the Warriors. I think they still lose, and then you rest Dort on the second night of a back-to-back in Sacramento to ensure you lose that one as well.
Yeah, it is interesting, though, because we've seen Dort, as of late at least, like sit the first night of the back-to-back. One guy I want to talk about a little bit here, just to get back into the game some and kind of the game flow and guys that stuck out. You mentioned Darius Bazley finishes tonight with 24 points on 7 of 18 shooting, 3 of 7 from 3, which was maybe the best thing to see. He's kind of fluctuated throughout his career. It's like he's hitting the 3, but he's missing layups. He can't finish at the rim. More recently, it's been like he's attacking the rim. He's finishing a little bit better, but he's not hitting his 3s. And tonight he kind of puts it all together. It's an efficient night. I mean, 7 of 18 isn't what you would call like a great scoring night or on great efficiency, but it's a lot better than what we saw. What was it a few weeks ago? Like 36 points on, what was it, like 25 shots or something? So it's just interesting to see his efficiency when he's hitting threes and finishing at the rim, even at a mediocre level. Like, this is the kind of guy that could be a long-term starter, although people kind of gave up on him mid-season.
Yeah, to me, the most impressive stat for Bazley tonight, 7 of 9 from the free throw line.
He's getting there. Right?
The fact that he got to the line 9 times is important. It's funny, you know, we've been talking about how Bazley needs to finish at the rim all season long. That's been the big critique. Finish at the rim, finish at the rim. And then tonight, with like a minute to go, the guy is finishing at the damn rim. And I'm like, Bazley, now's the time you decide to finish at the rim when you need the tank? Come on, bro. But no, he's looking a lot more confident. And I wonder, whenever this team gets, quote-unquote, back to normal, and you have Shea playing and you have 2 top 5 picks next year playing. But whenever this team is back to, like, their normal lineup, and Bazley is not taking 18 field goal attempts a game, but more like 8 field goal attempts a game, can he be efficient on that low volume? That's really what you want out of him, because I don't think for his career, unless something drastically changes, Bazley is not going to be putting up 18 shots a night during his career.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point there. Talking about at some point, you're going to have the team that is expected to be somewhat the go forward team, right? And we've talked about this when it comes to like evaluating like the Nuggets and the Jazz versus like the Clippers or the Lakers, just having a team where the core has played together for a long, long, long time can be a huge difference maker in the playoffs when you're playing against some of these other contenders. And I think that's something that, you know, even if Oklahoma City's a playoff team in 3 years, like maybe they're not a contender for 5 because those guys need 2 years to start playing together.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally a fair assumption. So although, Nick, one guy that I do think will be on the team and one guy that I wouldn't say irrationally high on, I'm just excited for, would be Ty Jerome. He just continues to show me stuff. I really like him. He's still got 2 years left on his rookie scale deal. I don't think he's going anywhere. I think they have a long runway with him and they plan to use it. But he just does some stuff, man. Like, he, to me, he is a great bench point guard. He is just like, you're solid, going to come in. He can run the second unit. He can get buckets. He's got deep range. You know, this is his first time in the NBA really getting like consistent minutes. Yep. And I think that helps him as well. But I'm excited for Ty. I think he's not like part of the core, right? Like your core 3 or 4 guys that are going to like lead you to the playoffs. But he's, when you find really good bench pieces like that, those are guys you want to hang on to. And the Thunder, like I said, they have 2 more years of Ty Jerome before they have to make any sort of decision on him. And so I'm really enjoying what I'm seeing from Ty.
So Ty is someone that's been very surprising for me too. Obviously, he was super, super injured his rookie year, injured at the start of this year. Talking to Suns guys about his rookie year, that a lot of people were saying like they didn't know if he had the speed or like the basketball IQ to play at a high level in the NBA with how fast the game is. And I think he's proven that that's inaccurate. Second on the team in assists. He's more than just a scorer. I mean, here's a question for you, Jacob. we looked at Hamidou Diallo as a guy that was a great sixth man or seventh or eighth, even on a contender in a couple of years, just being a bench spark. I think Ty can put up similar production in the scoring department off the bench while doing it more efficiently because he has a three-point shot and is a much better passer. He may not have the athleticism, but if he can be a serviceable defender and do all those things offensively, like, sign me up to have him as your eighth man.
Yeah, no, 100%. His shooting is awesome, but I think his best NBA skill is his passing. He had one tonight where he caught like a catch and shoot three out on like the right wing. I think it was in the third or fourth quarter. He caught it and like somebody like closed out hard to him and he pulled like a looking like he's going to shoot, looking at the rim, bullet pass underneath the basket to Jalen Horde. That was just like a really high level look. And, you know, Nick, I think that's something that you're starting to notice that I'm really starting to notice with this team. It's a different build than what Presti has done in the past. I think we're seeing, you know, we've talked a lot about this shifting of what type of player he's going after. The long, athletic, defensive-minded player that can't shoot to now the more skill-based player. I mean, look at the players on this team now that are really high-level passers, because there's a lot of them. You have Ty Jerome, you have Poku, you have Shea, you have Teo, you have... It's a very much a shift to like a different style of basketball. That's it's a new flavor, but I think it's kind of the new trend of the NBA. This is kind of what you're seeing other teams do as well, where we're starting to trend now more towards skill based players. And I think Presti is kind of on the cutting edge of that, especially with somebody like Poku, who is a physically a freak with how big he is, but still has like guard-like skills. It's an interesting dynamic shift for this team. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see them continue to go towards that in this upcoming draft as well. I think Ty Jerome kind of fits that mold of not super athletic, but a highly skilled kind of guy.
Yep, I totally agree. And we're getting up on time here, so I'm going to read through some of these questions. We've got quite a few. We've touched on Deck. Yes, Moses Brown is a board getter. I continue to be impressed with him. I don't think his scoring output will ever be super, super high, but he's an excellent rebounder. Yes, Clay Sally, I can imagine you'd be livid if Oklahoma City would have lost that one or won that one, rather. There's a question here, not a question, more of a statement. Russell Westbrook, we can pivot to him, a big-time member of the Thunder. In the past, four triple doubles away from Oscar Robertson's record. He's been fantastic. And Jacob, I know you're a big Russ guy. Isn't it so satisfying? I think they're 8-2 in their last 10 where Russ has got on this streak. Just seeing that once again, like we've seen it in Oklahoma City for a long time. We knew the triple doubles amounted to success, but the rest of the league just frankly didn't. Isn't it great just to see it on another team happening once again?
Yeah, and now the triple doubles aren't high scoring, and the assist numbers last night 14, 20, 24, just ridiculous,
yep.
Right? Absolutely ridiculous. Let me tell you something. We talked earlier about how the Thunder really want Miami to end up in the play-in tournament. That way, there's a chance that they get bumped out of the playoffs and end up in the lottery.
Yep.
Put Miami up against Washington. That's
no
a, that's
joke.
A must-watch television.
Yeah, I think both the Wizards and the Warriors are going to be so much fun in that play-in tournament, without a doubt. I'm very excited for that.
Yeah. According Russ to LeBron James, the person that came up with that is an idiot. So.
I know. One more thing in the chat. Russ's Tulsa Burning documentary premieres on the History Channel May 30th, the eve of the 100th anniversary. There will be an early screening Circle Cinema in Tulsa on Saturday, May 22nd. It's a very, 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 very good film. Highly recommend whenever they start doing those public screenings, you should definitely check it out, especially if you're from the state of Oklahoma or even in general, just because the message and kind of the backstory there is very fascinating. And then Jeremiah, last question or last statement, he says, Ty is a pretty good piece for a contender. I would tend to agree, although I think if he was on a contender, his role would be a lot more limited. It's hard to say. I think he could contribute, but there's a lot of veteran three-point shooters out there that I think teams or veteran playmakers as well that I think teams would rather have. But I think on the Thunder, Perfect fit. He can develop quicker than if he was on a contender. And I don't think Presti has any plans to move him to a contender between now and contract negotiations. With that, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. Again, Oklahoma City falls to the Sacramento Kings 103-99 in a game that got way too close at the end, with Oklahoma City winning the fourth quarter 30-22. Got back in it there late, but the Kings pull it off, and the Thunder live another day to tank for Cade. Jacob, what's the other hashtags you got out there? Fade for Cade.
Fade for Cade, suck for Suggs. What was it? Bean for Green or something like that. I can't remember. We've come up with a lot of ridiculous ones. Miss for Mobley. Miserable for Mobley. There's a lot.
I'll pay for your Bobo's chicken if you can figure out a career.
Hey, trying to get a Kuminga one is like nearly impossible, but if you're tempting me with some Bobos, Nick, goddammit, I'll make it happen.
Perfect. Well, thanks guys for tuning in. Again, Oklahoma City's next game will be actually back-to-back against the Warriors. It's not a true back-to-back. It's May 6th and then May 8th. That'll be Thursday and Saturday. It's got a string of four straight 9 p.m. Central games, so you guys better be ready to stay up late here on the post-game pod. Luckily, I am not in charge of those games, so I'll let Jacob and the rest of the crew stay up late while I'm getting a good night's sleep. But until we talk to you guys again, have a good rest of your week.